One who accepts material sense objects as desirable certainly becomes attached to them. From such attachment lust arises, and this lust creates quarrel among men. Purport. The actual goal of human life should not be material sense gratification, for it is the basis of conflict in human society. Although the Vedic literature sometimes sanctions sense gratification, the ultimate purpose of the Vedas is renunciation, since Vedic culture cannot possibly recommend anything that disturbs human life. A lusty person is easily angered and becomes inimical to anyone frustrating his lusty desires. Since his sex desire can never be satisfied, a lusty person ultimately becomes frustrated with his own sex partner, and thus a love-hate relationship develops. A lusty person considers himself to be the enjoyer of God's creation, and is therefore full of pride and false prestige. The lusty, proud person will not be attracted to the process of humble submission at the lotus feet of the bona fide spiritual master. Attraction to illicit sex is thus the direct enemy of Krishna consciousness, which depends upon humble submission to the representative of the Supreme Lord. Lord Krishna also states in Bhagavad Gita that desire for illicit sex is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. Because modern society sanctions unrestricted mixing of men and women, its citizens cannot possibly achieve peace. Rather, the regulation of conflict becomes the basis of social survival. This is the symptom of an ignorant society falsely accepting the material body as the highest good, as described here by the words, Vishayeshu Gunadhyasat. One who is too affectionate to his own body will inevitably be seized by sex desire. The first word in this verse is an inflected form of the word Vishaya, which has various meanings. It may simply mean subject. Even in school, on the school books in India, you'll see in the Hindi writing, Vishaya. It means what's the subject that you're going to write in this book. But in spiritual literature, it particularly means sense gratification, or the objects of sense gratification. And Vishayi means one who enjoys or attempts or who's dedicated to enjoying this material world. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Bishoyer anna khaile malin hoiman. Anyone who eats the food of a materialist, Vishayi means a materialist, then simply by doing that, his mind becomes dirty. So this is a very important word, Vishaya. So someone who considers sense gratification a desirable goal naturally becomes attached to the objects of sense gratification. So from this we get a clue as to those of us who are here, we've come here early in the morning on Sunday morning, whereas most people in San Diego and probably all the west coast of America have at this time not yet renounced their warm and comfortable beds. They like to sleep a long time, but devotees, they have a completely different outlook. They want to sleep less and serve more. So we came here. Of course, some people get up early in the morning for going for running so they can have a healthy body to enjoy sense gratification. But devotees have a completely different outlook, that we want to rise early in the morning to hear and chant about Krishna. So we want to know, it's important for us to understand how to become renounced, how to become detached from this material world. So here is a clue that someone who considers this material world enjoyable will naturally become attached to it. Therefore, if we understand, or if we have the conception, which is actually the understanding, there's a difference between conception and understanding. Conception means to form a mental construct, whereas understanding means to see things as they are, as they actually are, not to impose a false understanding, but the actual understanding. So if we actually understand that this material world is miserable, and engagement in sense gratification is the cause of that misery, then naturally we'll not want to become attached to this material world. Yehi sanspasha jabhoga dukha yove evate adyanta vanta kauntayana teshu ramate buddhaha. Lord Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita that sense gratification, described in this verse as sangsparsha ja bhoga, the attempt to enjoy, to appropriate for oneself the sensation, to appropriate for one's own pleasure, then sensation that arises from the interaction of the senses with the sense objects, which is in materialistic parlance called happiness, sensual pleasure. That is actually beginning, middle, and end, simply suffering. Therefore, an intelligent person does not partake in that. So, renunciation, actual renunciation, is on the basis of understanding that material interaction of the material senses with the material objects for the sake of enjoying them is simply the cause of suffering. Therefore, we should not partake in that. That's actual renunciation. There's another kind of renunciation, which is performed for the sake of, it's a trade-in for the sake of getting later enjoyment, more. Hiranyakashipu is an example. He undertook tremendous austerities, but his aim was to gain power so that he could enjoy the world more. And that's quite common. Just like yesterday, Ekadashi was observed. Vaishnavas observe Ekadashi for the pleasure of Hari. But many people observe it for the sake of their own, enhancing their own enjoyment. Or maybe with mixed motives. May Krishna be pleased, and then he'll be pleased with me, and then he'll bless me so that I can enjoy this world more nicely. And there is a book which is translated into English called Sri Ekadashi Mahatmya, which is a collection of narrations from Shastra, which describes how you can get all kinds of enjoyable things by observing Ekadashi, which is not the actual purpose. That's it goes against the actual purpose. So, renunciation should be for the sake of serving Krishna, pleasing Krishna. No, I'm just trying to remember, what is that? What is that? Krishnate bhogatyag. That one should indulge in the interaction of the senses with the sense objects, or renounce such interaction of the senses, of the sense objects, for Krishna's sake. That question, Srila Prabhupada asked Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that many devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they renounced the world, but some didn't. They appeared to be great enjoyers. Actually, Ramananda Rai is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita as appearing to be a Vishayi, an enjoyer of this world. So how is that? Srila Prabhupada wanted to he asked Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who explained that one should adopt a position which is best for serving Krishna. That's all. If one is better suited for someone to be a sannyasi than for serving Krishna, then he should be, considering all pros and cons. If it is better, yes, sometimes devotees would ask Srila Prabhupada to take sannyasi. I heard this years ago, maybe you could confirm that, Dravida Prabhu. Many years ago I heard that Radha Bala Prabhu, of the press, he was overseeing the printing years ago, had asked Prabhupada if he could take sannyas. He was unmarried at the time, and Prabhupada told him to get married. You never heard that. I heard that years ago. Maybe it was someone else, maybe it was an imagination or whatever. So what is best for one for one's devotional service? That is the consideration. But whatever ashram, whatever position one may be in, this principle of not being attached to the material world and being attached to Krishna, that is essential. Otherwise, if one thinks, well, I'll be a grihastha, that's better for me. But then he thinks that to be a grihastha means to enjoy this material world, then that is a mistake. It can also be a mistake for a devotee to push himself so hard into renunciation that he snaps, so to speak. That can also be a mistake. So we have to see that if one understands the principle of renunciation and thinks, okay, so let me renounce eating, sleeping, all these things. It used to be a common syndrome in our movement that devotees would try their best to stop eating and sleeping, and they go on for a few days, sleeping 3 hours, 2 hours, eating very little, and then they'd, after a few days, they'd binge and sleep for 24 hours non-stop. Because it was not on the actual platform of realization. Raghunath Das Goswami, all the six Goswamis, Raghunath Das was the most renounced. Let's rephrase that. He exhibited the greatest standard of renunciation. But it wasn't that they were thinking, okay, now I've got to cut down so I can be more advanced. But in their case, it was, they didn't sleep because they didn't think of it. They were just absorbed in love of Krishna, and they wanted to serve him more and more and more. So, for a devotee who's on the platform of sadhana, a sadhak, or one who's aspiring for perfection, then comes the consideration that one should not eat too much. What is that? That verse in Bhagavad Gita? Yukta ahara viharasya, yukta cheshtasya karmasya, yukta swapnava bodhasya, yogo bhavati dukaha. One should be regulated in one's eating, sleeping, activities, in everything. One should be regulated and moderate, neither excessively, not practicing renunciation at a level beyond one's ability to maintain steadily, and also not indulging in sense gratification. Actually, between the two, the tendency should be to always toward renunciation, to always try to become more and more detached from this world. Now, such advice of Krishna, that is suitable for a person on the platform of sadhana. But for one who's siddha, one who has attained perfection, then such considerations do not remain. Because even if they're sleeping, even a devotee on the level of sadhana, he sleeps just because it's necessary for the body to regain energy to serve Krishna properly. But for one who's on the perfectional stage, even if they sleep, they appear to sleep, that sleeping is not the descent into tamaguna of an ordinary person, but they think of Krishna within their sleep. It's not the same as that of a non-devotee, although it may appear to be. Therefore, we have to be very careful in judging pure devotees. They're not on the same level as us, although in many ways they may appear to be, because they eat, they sleep, sometimes they get sick, they grow old, and in so many ways they appear to be like ordinary persons. But we should understand that someone whose consciousness is absorbed in Krishna, they have no attraction to the sense enjoyment of this material world, even though it may appear to be some... One anecdote that one devotee had cooked some... I heard this also. It may not be written down, but that I believe it was in New Vrindavan, devotees had made a big pot of sweet rice with the idea that, well, we'll serve Prabhupada and then we'll serve everyone else. But Prabhupada, they gave Srila Prabhupada his meal. At the end, the sweet rice, Prabhupada asked for more and more and more. And devotees were surprised that Prabhupada was taking so much. Prabhupada saw that and he said, "When I eat this sweet rice, it's so nice I cannot control my senses." One devotee told me he was cooking for Srila Prabhupada in Stockholm and he made some halava. It was a similar thing. He made a big pot and Srila Prabhupada just took more and more and more till it was all gone. So the devotee was very pleased, actually. He'd cooked with the idea that everyone else will take, but he was very happy that Srila Prabhupada took more. So is Srila Prabhupada a sense enjoyer of this material world? If anyone thinks like that, then they are doomed. That is called Gurushu Naramatihi. To think that the spiritual master is simply like an ordinary person of this material world. So all the activities of a fully absorbed devotee of Krishna should be understood in relation to how they are employing their senses in relationship to Krishna. So for such persons, renunciation, it's not really renunciation. What we call renunciation, we may say that the six Goswamis were highly renounced. Well, in one sense, yes. Tyaktva, having given up. They gave up the association of highly vishaya asakta, this persons who are highly attached to this material world. But we should understand that they themselves never were attached to it. It may appear that they were attached to this world. It may appear that they were associating with sinful people, or that they even became sinful themselves. It may appear like that, but we should understand that they were completely absorbed in love of Krishna, even at the time that when they were apparently involved in sense gratification. So the question of renunciation doesn't arise for them because they were never attached to anything. So what is the question of renunciation? But for less advanced persons, this renunciation means what? It's not that we're actually giving something up because we don't own anything in the first place, but it means to renounce the sense, which is a false sense of owning or enjoying anything. We can't, as Srila Prabhupada often gave that example, that if someone walks into the bank and makes an announcement, "Ladies and gentlemen, I hereby renounce all the money in this bank," it's meaningless, because it doesn't belong to him anyway. But, so similarly, this is like the renunciation of the Mayavadis. They think I'm giving up this world, but nothing ever belonged to us anyway. So what's the question of renouncing anything? But we think that such and such things belong to me. So to give up that sense, which is anyway a false understanding, to give up the sense that I am the enjoyer, That is called renunciation. And that may be practiced somewhat severely when we say a balanced approach, but as I said, the fine-tuning should be toward the side of renunciation, not toward the side of sense enjoyment. That we practice not to interact the objects, the senses with the objects of the senses, in a manner that is likely to cause the mind to become disturbed, so that we become attracted to the sense objects. And the example is given in this purport. That modern society sanctions unrestricted of mixing of women and men. So in practically any culture all over the world since time immemorial, the separation of men and women has been a principle. And it's still there to some extent, even in the modern West, to some extent. I mean, there are still men and women's changing rooms, right, separately on the beach.
Not in colleges.
Yeah,
they have co-ed dorms for that.
Yeah, well, Hare Krishna. It's the lowest of the lowest of darkest age. But still, to some, at least we can say in some places in America, they probably still have separate toilets, is it?
Generally speaking,
yeah. And that principle has been there through, particularly in societies. Well, all societies have some religious system, so that you'll find, as I noted last night, that in the Catholic Church, that the men, I don't know about now, but the men will stand over that. When I was a kid, it used to be the men on one side and the women on the other side. The idea is some separation should be there, at least in front of, in the holy place, in the church. And Tejas Prabhu, who I think you don't know, all the devotees they know, he's before he joined the movement, this was, in the early 1960s, before the movement even existed, actually, he spent time as a Peace Corps worker of in tribal areas in Andhra Pradesh, and he noted these people, they're said to be less cultured tribal people. How the men and women, they just live separately. It was just a principle among them that they lived separately. So in modern society, they promote the principle that pleasure, the bodily pleasure, sensual pleasure, is desirable. Therefore, it should be enhanced as much as possible. Therefore, any restrictions on that, this is a Freudian idea, they're just unnecessary taboos, which actually cause disturbance. Freud's idea was that because we have these taboos and we don't indulge in sense gratification, therefore our minds are disturbed. But the actual result of removing the taboos and encouraging sense gratification, unrestricted sense gratification, is people's minds become more disturbed. So, in one sense, it could be said that Freud is right, because if you try to make things too tight, then and restrict people beyond their level of what we could say their level of maintainable renunciation, then they may act in abnormal ways. And it's quite common, I happen to know from India and Bangladesh, that when in a society where young men and women are not allowed to come together, then homosexuality, at least among young boys, homosexuality is quite common. So what's the solution for that? Get them married early. That is the... And also train people from a young age in these principles. The idea that, well, it's... the idea that if men and women are... they must come together and they must enjoy and it's inevitable and can't be stopped. But the Vedic culture is different. The idea is training. Training from the very beginning in the understanding that the interaction of the senses with the sense objects is simply a cause of distress. Therefore, it should be regulated, or better still, stopped. Minimized. Regulated means minimized. So that training is not there in modern India. We say the culture is going on, but the basic principles of it are not taught. Even I would guess, Vednarayan Prabhu, I would guess that you were raised in a culture where boys and the girls didn't mix much. No, I would imagine that in the deep south of South India. But why so? Was that ever explained to you? No. So the culture was going on, but why, you don't know. And meanwhile, there are all cinema posters everywhere. And were you allowed to go to the cinema? From what age? From the age of 10, you see, pre-puberty, they're allowed to go to the cinema. And the cinema is all lusty.
In the theater
they have a partition, but not on the screen, not what you see. Men and women. What about, you were in Vala Vidyanagar, it was already breaking down. Oh, it's totally gone now. In Vallabhvidyanagar, it's just like in the West. And it's in Gujarat. It's just like, I mean, they have boys and students, boys and girls, or young men and young women, as you would call them here, living together. So.
And Vallabhvidyanagar was established, the founder, he made a law that there should not be any cinemas in the town.
He made a rule, and that's still going on. But everyone... Well, now they all have motorbikes and they can go to Anand Karamsad in 5 minutes. They can be there. Who made the?
He was the founder of the
I see.
State, so he said no cinema at all in the university.
I see. Because if the cinema is there, how can they concentrate on their studies? So yeah, that point I'm making is that the culture was going on. And people, they had some idea that it's of the culture that and should be maintained. But then for making money, for sense gratification, movies are being made to change that culture. Movies are being made which show that which the culture is designed to protect one from. And so the desires arise and... therefore, gradually, the culture is pretty good. People saying, well, what's the point of that? There's no need of it. Better, we all live together. And then we'll find it's quite common in the Gujarat, especially AIDS people, young men from good families, they get AIDS and die at a young age, and all the attendant miseries that come from indulgence in the senses. So, this Krishna Conscious Movement is recommending a move to a different kind of culture altogether, in which self-realization is understood to be the goal of life, not sense indulgence. This, you see, like even in Islam, they're very strict about homosexuality, they're very strict. Which is that, by the way, this homosexuality in Vallabhacharya's Subhodini Tika, in his Bhagavatam commentary, he states that it is commented on by at least one Vaishnava Acharya. He says it's due to atikama, excessive lust. So, homosexuality or any kind of sexuality, any kind of sexual intelligence which is not regulated by Vedic injunction, that means within marriage only is it acceptable, even then with rules and regulations, then this is what we want to introduce, because that is the greatest enemy of this desiring to enjoy sense gratification, of which the highest standard is, or the highest standard, or the most, not exactly highest, but most intense, the most bewildering, is that of sexual indulgence. That should be controlled. It's understood, it's there, it's not easy to overcome. But it should be controlled, and why so, that is required to be explained. So I'm saying within Islam they have these, they're very strict in some ways. I guess that's famous. You've heard about the Taliban and how they're trying to enforce all these things, which to modern Americans has seemed barbaric, like how the Taliban, they won't allow women to wear nail polish. Actually, it's not a bad idea. Nail polish is pretty stupid. I mean, decorating your toenails, but... that point is there in Vedic culture also, that a woman decorates her body for her husband, not for anyone and everyone. She's not meant for public perusal. She's only meant for decoration, yes, but at home. And outside, well, they don't go. Only for social occasions, accompanied by male members of the family, to go to the temple. They can go regularly to the temple, but just moving and cruising here and there as they like, when they like, that's actually uncivilized. Although, if you say that in modern America, they'll call you a Taliban fundamentalist. But it is uncivilized because women are not protected, and it encourages lust, which is the unrestricted lust is the downfall of human society. So, of course, the Talibanic response to this, we may not agree with that, but the principle, they understand, well, they've understood the principle to some extent, but they don't have a deep understanding of these points. They don't have a philosophical understanding of how lust implicates us in material existence. They just think, well, according to the Islamic law, it's like that, so we follow it. But they don't understand why. So it's important, it's essential for devotees to understand why, to understand the principles of Vedic culture and why they need to be implemented. And on this basis, preach Krishna consciousness. We need not be afraid, as it seems many of our devotees in the West are afraid of. They feel that, well, no one can accept if we speak about separation of the sexes and how women should have a protected, subordinate role. And I think, well, no one will accept that, but why not? It makes sense. You just see your present society is a complete mess. Your women's liberation has not helped women. The female mentality brings the desire to have children, have a home, be protected, but hardly any women, they have a fixed husband throughout their life. They don't have children. They're trained to think that having children is stupid. The whole so-called women's liberation movement is the worst thing that ever happened for women or men. And because it's on the principle of sense enjoyment, then is guaranteed disaster for the whole of human society. No one can even begin to advance in spiritual life. They may have religion, which are based on some dogma, but people can't even begin to advance in actual spiritual life because they have no idea what spiritual life is. One cannot understand that one is not the body, which is the first principle of spiritual life, is if one is attempting to enjoy it. So, of course, it may be not the first thing that we speak to everyone when they come in the door for the first time, but these principles can be spoken to people who are at least somewhat sober. And fortunately, by the grace of material nature, it may be that people will start to become a little more sober as the whole materialistic civilization, the dream, as the American dream, is clearly turning into a nightmare, and people are waking up to the fact that our society is a failure. So let us give them the solution. That's a particularly thorny issue, you could say, that of gender roles. It's much easier to preach among certain people about, well, animal slaughter should be stopped. Many people will agree with that. But this issue is, in one sense, it's even more crucial, because there's pungsastriya mituni bhavametam tayoraho hridaya grantimahu. This, the very knot, the core attachment that maintains our that position in the material world, is the attraction between male and female. So, in one sense, it's even more important to establish than no intoxication, no meat eating. Those other things will follow if this principle is discussed and implemented. So, where do we go from here? Yeah, I suggest that we don't avoid the issue. At least among our own devotees, we should institute this. If we don't institute it, at least among our own devotees, then what is the hope of showing others? At least among our own devotees, we should understand this and not follow the norms of normal Western society, in which men and women mix very freely, there's no discrimination. But that is not allowed in civilized society, because where the ghee, the hard ghee, the cold ghee, is placed next to a fire, then naturally it will melt. This example is given in Shastra. Srila Prabhupada often gave this, fire and butter. It's a natural principle. So similarly, where women and men mix freely, then due to proximity, one's rigid resolve to control the senses, become advanced in spiritual life, that will melt. So, sadhu savdhan, be careful, devotees, be careful, always be careful. Shapane o na karo bhai stri sambhashan. This was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's directive to Raghunath Das Goswami, that even in your mind, even in your dream, you should not converse with a woman. It doesn't mean you shouldn't say anything ever, but don't have extended conversations, into free mixing. So that is actually the main principle of renunciation. We see it even in the Catholic Church. They don't understand why. That's why they're having so many problems. They don't understand why, and they don't know the science of how to maintain renunciation. But that's the basic principle of the priesthood, and in Vedic culture, sannyas. Sannyas means the renunciation in so many ways, but most importantly of womanly association. Even now in India, that just just this year, earlier this year, this so-called Paramahamsa Nityananda, he was so much maligned in the press and by the public because he was famous as a sannyasi. He's a young man, he's only 30, early 30s, not fit for sannyasi. So he made a big name for himself as a sannyasi, but he was exposed as having illicit relations with women. And it was, even now in India today, of course that was South India, it wasn't Delhi or Gujarat, then even now that was considered very bad and his whole reputation was bad. Even Gujarat for that matter, Kutch and Saurashtra, it's different to Ahmedabad and Vallabhvidyanagar. Even Surat's better for that matter. So, sadhu savdhan, be careful. Be careful. Understand this. This principle of controlling the senses, Srila Prabhupada in one in his translation of one verse, he calls this the regulative principles of freedom. So he says, where's the freedom? I want freedom to enjoy my senses. But the freedom is the freedom to be free from the dictation of the senses. That is the freedom. That otherwise we think we're free to enjoy ourselves. No, we're not. We're slaves. We're slaves of our senses. And the whole society has made people slaves of the senses. Advertisements for ice cream, meat. In this country, it seems more than other countries. Oh, horrible billboards with meat, dripping meat. And I don't see in other countries so much. Horrible. But that's just to make people slaver and then go and spend their money unthinkingly because they're slaves of their senses. But freedom is to control the senses. You can, that you have the freedom to say no, no, no. I'm not a slave of McDonald's. I'm not a slave of Coca-Cola. I'm not a slave of womanly attraction. So that is the freedom. I'm a slave of Krishna. Let us become slaves of Krishna, what Krishna wants. So this is all anathema to almost everyone in this country and in the world. Well, that's why everyone in the world is getting born again and dying again and suffering again. This is spiritual knowledge, which, true, it's not going to be very popular. You're not going to win any popularity contest by discussing this. But it is required. Required discussion. Let everyone come. Let everyone chant Hare Krishna. Let everyone take prasadam. And those, we invite everyone. And those who are more serious, we'll tell them, this is the path of freedom. Not everyone will take it, but that doesn't mean that we can somehow or other trick Krishna and adjust the process and say, hey look, Krishna, we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're taking prasadam, so you know, let's, you know, give us a place in the rasa dance. Wait a minute, there's some more conditions also. You have to become completely free from desire for personal sense gratification. So We have to be very careful. I've seen, I spent years in Bengal among the people who chant Hare Krishna. They love to chant Hare Krishna, expert kirtaniyas, but then they eat fish also. Ugh. And smoke also. And they think, well, it's all okay, we're chanting Hare Krishna. What's the problem? So I see in our society also, the young people, they love to chant Hare Krishna, but they mix boys and girls as if it's all just the same, and it's all, we're all brothers and sisters. But that's danger, very dangerous. That's not the proper life of a devotee. You can't take some rules that you like and other ones that you don't like. It may seem very, to modern people, this may seem very harsh and unkind, but it's actually harsh and unkind not to train people like this. If you say, our children, we're not going to allow them to watch television. Oh, that's horrible. How can you be so harsh to them that you allow them to watch that which will totally pollute their consciousness? So, it's a different outlook altogether. But this outlook of devotees is based on understanding of the actual purpose of life and how to attain it. Whereas the outlook of those who would indulge in sense gratification is based on, they've just completely surrendered to the idea that, yeah, let's indulge our senses, which is no auspiciousness whatsoever to anyone. So, Hare Krishna, that's all I'll say for now, and open up for comments, suggestions, corrections, distortions, or whatever. Okay.
Just a quick story. I think Gwaithi Maharaj, he's been in India for many, many years. He hasn't been back in America for a long time. It's many, many years ago. So I picked him up at the airport. We're driving along in a car, driving to San Diego on I-5. And if you know Gwaithi Maharaj, you know when he's not happy, feel the heat. You know, he was real silent. I thought, what have I done? I picked him up already. I mean, I've only had a few minutes here, you know. After about 20 minutes in the car, he turns and he says, "Don't they know there's sannyasis on the road?" What do you mean, Mark? And he pointed out all the signs, and I really hadn't thought about that much, you know. But practically every sign was something horrible, you know. He was coming from India, but at least in those days he didn't see these things. So I said, "All right, I'll call the mayor right now with the January March and take him down," you know. But it's a fact. And he was seeing it, kind of coming fresh to it. We're acclimatized, but coming fresh to it. He was saying, "We're just, you know, bombarded and battered and at every butchered at every moment."
Yeah. I asked Gauranga Prasad a few days ago that he's from India. I asked, do you get used to this culture? Do you think of it as normal? I mean, I think it's horrible, but you get used to it. And he said, yeah, I kind of got used to it. That's why when I leave India to go to the West, I'm literally seeing the days till I go back to India. Even India today is a mess, but it's still so much better for spiritual life. Srila Prabhupada wanted his disciples to go once a year to Mayapur and Vrindavan. Temple presidents in the West hate this when you tell them that. You should go once a year, spend time in Mayapur and Vrindavan, and come back and preach in the West. And he also wanted some to stay. And the temple presidents hate that even more. But anyway. And get away with it by saying Prabhupada said it, which he did. Yes?
Maharaj, thank you very much. I always appreciate your willingness to speak about these subjects. I guess my question is about how devotees in this temple, who are preaching, sometimes we find there's a difficulty because you said we should speak these topics amongst ourselves.
At least among ourselves, right?
But in, like I said, the modern political correctness, if you will, movement is infiltrating the Krishna conscious preaching style. So there's also, you're trying to teach these values, these principles, which will rectify human society. But then in the community, then you have a big push to bring in this political correctness, these values of equalizing on the material platform. For example, there's a kind of movement, a push that women should also be called Prabhu in order to substantiate equality within the Christian conscious society. So there's things like this. So I'm saying this is kind of a challenge because you want to present these values as that which is going to, fix society. But even within the community, you are supposed to use because of that.
Well, I have some suggestions. One thing is establish brahmachari ashrams, as is being done here. Because brahmachari ashrams cannot be established without understanding of these principles, and people cannot remain as brahmacharis without understanding these principles. As far as the broader ISKCON society, well, preach about it. If what we're saying is right, based on Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, and if devotees are sincere to follow Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, then we can preach it, and those who are sincere to follow Guru, Sadhu and Shastra and don't have deeply rooted misunderstandings, they can accept that. I don't... I don't recommend so much engaging in debates, especially email debates, but you can just present the case. About 2 years ago, I did a three-part seminar called Women, Masters or Mothers, in which I discussed all these issues, point by point. And it was quite popular, had a lot of downloads. And I was expecting all kinds of flack, but I didn't get any. And I was told of people who'd changed their outlook from the modern politically correct to the Krishna correct, or the Shastric correct, by understanding that, by understanding the principles on which it works. We shouldn't be Taliban-esque and just try to forcibly impose it, but let people understand. And create situations in which those principles are followed. Actually, the place where I gave that seminar was in Secunderabad, twin city of Hyderabad, which is a major city in India. And there's a street there called Prabhupada Marg. Marg means road. So when the housing area was being developed, our devotees, they bought a bunch of houses and they approached the municipality. The road wasn't named, so they called it Prabhupada Marg. So there are quite a few devotees there, and as I go there regularly, and the devotees tend to take seriously somewhat what I say, I said, well, why don't send your wives out to work? They should be at home looking after the children. And that's all explained why in the Women's Masters and Mothers. So they do. And they have their, and also I'm saying, you know, for India at least, where the women, you know, they're not leaping around in the kirtan. So, but I suggested you have your satsang, your get together of the women. So I suggest you could do it 2-3 times a week. They can come together for 1 hour, whatever, and then they can do their kirtan and everything together, discuss Bhagavad Gita. So they liked it so much that they're doing it daily, except at the weekends, for 2.5 hours every day. So they have everything, but just separately, that's all. So, I mean, I'm just suggesting how we can implement these things and everyone will be happy. It's not meant for putting anyone down, but lifting everyone up. In a manner that is suitable for everyone's spiritual advancement. The idea that we'll all go up by all doing, acting in the same way and everyone's all equal in all respects, it's a nonsense idea, actually. There's Vedic or any society is structured. Even America is supposed to be democratic, and there's not possible. Democratic society, communist society, there's always, as Srila Prabhupada said, the strong will always dominate the weak. That is the law of, that's how it works in nature. So whatever system, whatever laws you make, the strong will always dominate the weak. Even you make so many laws in this country, but people, by money power, they're able to manipulate the whole system. And the strong dominate the weak. Whether the strength is, and in Vedic society, the strength is Brahma Teja, spiritual strength that rules society. In modern society, it's money power.
Well, you know, just because men are lusty, women have to be kept, you know, sequestered, and you know,
men are lusty.
Get together and let the women, you know,
men are women.
Subjected.
Men are lusty and women are lusty, both. Therefore, better keep them separate and uplift both. Total separation, that's also not total separation, but considerable separation.
But it seems that the oppression is on the women. The men can...
If you take it as oppression...
But the men can drive cars, the men can go here and there.
No, actually, driving cars, we're not in favor of driving cars either, for that matter.
Huh?
We're not in favor of driving cars either.
Yeah, but in principle, somehow or other, it always is the women who have to be kept sequestered and repressed, and the men have.
Well, if you call it repressed, that's a loaded word. the word used in the Shastra is protected.
Well, call it what you want. My father said diplomacy. If you are telling them to go to hell, they look forward to the trip.
Yeah. All right. So, women are... Yes. I tell you what. Listen to that women, masters and mothers thing. Then come back. That actually this one of my disciples, he was being harangued on the phone by a feminist woman, and he told her, look, please don't say anything, please listen to that and then come back. So please listen to that and then come back to me. And she did. She rang him after a week and said, okay, now I understand.
That could actually be maybe the issue, is because we have, like you said, you have him, you know, there's partition or separation. And you ask, but why? He said, oh, we don't know why, but, you know, the movie. So it's like that also.
Well, the point is, I'm not going to go through the whole thing right now. I have the answer. If you want, you can access it. I know you're acting as a devil's advocate here anyway.
No, but your point is good. If you want, if you're serious about it, fine, let's have a serious discussion. Go back, study the answer, study my presentation, then come back.
Yeah.
Because I just take pot shots with stereotypes. Let's talk deeply. No, I respect that.
Yeah, just, you know, we have these rules of separation, but that's the thing. Maybe not so many people know why, and that's exactly what we need, is that kind of education that goes deeply.
Yeah, that's why I want to write more and more books. I have, yeah, it should all be written in books. You can also, please, if you're feeling some pain in the heart from hearing all these things, please listen to that and then come back later. We also have to see that it is how the ladies are looked after in Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada was concerned about that. Those in Secunderabad, I spoke about that, how they're all quite happy with that. One reason is it's probably easier to institute in India, where that still the remnants of the culture and the understanding of that culture is there. And even just when was that? Just a few days ago in the airport, we were going through the security check, and I went to one side where there was a man and there was a woman on the other, and I didn't think actually, I just went to the male side, and she said, the woman there said, yeah, oh, I understand, you're monks, I respect that, like that.
She asked me whether she could check my ticket. Do you think that's appropriate for me, I'm a woman?
So she understood that. It's not such a difficult thing to understand. So Hare Krishna, we'll finish there for now.